Nebraska can be like a small town on some occasions, and today is one of them. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Alaska's one member of the U.S. House of Representatives will be here to take your phone calls momentarily to reach Don Young. The toll-free phone number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. In Anchorage, that's a local call of 550-8422, email talk at APRN.org. In the years since he was first elected in 1973, Don Young has spent time in both the majority and the minority. He'll be with us today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ACS. With Android on ACS, an app is available to listen to NPR programming on your phone. Complete details at acsalaska.com.
So the subject today on Talk of Alaska, and you can start making your calls right now at 1-800-478-8255. The topic is going to be federal issues. Our guest, who was expected in the studio momentarily, I was just on the cell phone with his aide, and they are on their way. And so we should have Congressman Young with us momentarily. As I said, you can get the get your call in right now if you have a subject you'd like to discuss with our one and only member of the U.S. House of Representatives. The number is 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422. And the email is talk at APRN.org. As we were saying, to introduce the program, Congressman Young was elected in 1973. It is often the case where small states value longevity in their representatives in Congress, and that is what has happened with Don Young. Seniority allows him privileges, and also he basically ends up knowing everybody there. So he's now one of the most senior members of the U.S. House of Representatives, but he finds himself in the minority. And at a time when politics have taken a rather partisan turn. So we have a Democratic administration and a Democrat-dominated House, and they try and work together to advance legislation, which essentially leaves the Republicans in the point of at the point of digging in their heels and saying, no, not like this. And that is where the congressman finds himself this year. This is also an election year. And because of that, every member of the House faces reelection. We're seeing a number of them, however, who are deciding not to run. So there will be open seats, and a very interesting political equation is beginning to evolve for this election year of 2010. As I said, Congressman Young is not quite in the room with us yet, but we have every confidence that he's at this very moment approaching the building. And in the meantime, I can talk about him, and you can talk about him. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. Congress is on its President's Day recess, and in this case, it's probably a good thing that they come back and talk with their constituents. For Alaska, our position versus the federal government is problematical at the moment. Our administration, the Parnell administration, which has just taken over from the Palin administration, is really not happy about a lot of things that are going on in the federal government. And as a matter of fact, going to the point of referring things to the law department. And so there will be that to be talked about. And there are so many areas where federal authority would appear to be bumping into state authority. One of them that may be coming down the pike before very long is subsistence. It's really hard to tell, but there certainly is some reevaluation going on of the federal posture towards subsistence. And it would appear that there is little will in the U.S. Congress to do much from that end in this particular year. The two big things before Congress, that I think we all know, are health care and climate warming, which they both seem to be pretty stalemated on. So it'll be interesting to see the insights that the congressman has on that. Other areas where there's a great deal of conflict between the state and the federal government is the issue of endangered species. It appears that with diminishing sea ice and changing habitat characteristics, there are a number of creatures in Alaska who are eligible for protection under the Endangered Species Act. And there are a number of questions about that, and primary among them probably is whether the Endangered Species Act is really the proper tool for addressing the question of greenhouse gases and climate warming. And that's a wide open question. We've brought that one up on Talk of Alaska a number of different times. And, you know, I think the listeners are divided on that. But I don't think we're saying anything that is extreme at all in saying that many would rather that there was something in law that set more definite policy with regards to greenhouse gases and the climate. And we'll just see what happens with that. I think there's certainly a will to move towards renewable sources of energy. But for Alaska, our federal situation is, we'll look at it. Our money comes from the oil and gas industry. It's really pretty hard to argue that Alaska isn't advantaged by producing more fossil energy. Well, as we wait for Congressman Young here, I'm joined with APRN's Libby Casey. Hey, thanks for being able to come to the phone there in the Capitol building. Libby, how are you doing?
I'm great, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Did the snow melt yet?
No, and my street hasn't even really been plowed yet, so it's a totally different ball game than up in Alaska. D.C. just wasn't equipped to deal with it. Last week, of course, everything was at like a big standstill here in D.C. Not a lot happened in the House and Senate, and this week they're all on recess. So our entire delegation's up in the state, so not a lot happening here now, but it's kind of a chance for everybody to recharge their batteries, for the members of the delegation to go home and check in with constituents, and people like Congressman Young maybe even do a little bit of a campaign check-in since he is up for re-election this year.
You know, it seems that the way that its policy is rolling through Congress, or more accurately, maybe not rolling through Congress, is that Obama is working with the Democrats in the House, where they have a solid majority, and they essentially enact the Obama agenda, pretty much. But without much Republican cooperation, if actually maybe it's accurate to say without any Republican cooperation. And then it sits there waiting for the Senate to decide what to do, which the Senate can't seem to do.
Right. Well, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, liberal Democrat from California, was able to really get enough votes without having to bring the Republicans into the dialogue, into the conversation. And so only now, as there are a lot of log jams in the Senate, are people trying to reach across party lines, or people like President Obama by going out and talking to the Republican House members, trying to reach out and get some more coalitions built, because Speaker Pelosi was able to pass a ton of legislation in the House without them. But we're not seeing the same thing in the Senate. Like you said, the recent election of Scott Brown, the senator from Massachusetts, and then other things. Like just yesterday, huge news down here that Indiana Senator Evan Bayh plans to not run for re-election this year, means the Democrats are probably going to lose another seat. So there has to be some more coalition building. And Bayh said that one of the reasons he's stepping down is because people just aren't working together in the Senate. And I'd be really curious to hear what Congressman Young has to say about ways that the House and Senate can work in a more bipartisan way, because it's really not happening.
Well, you and me both, Libby, and he's now entered the building and entered the studio and is putting on his earphones now. And so we'll get a chance. Can you hang with us for a little bit here, Libby?
Absolutely.
Okay. That'll be great. Congressman Young, can you hear me on the earphones there?
I can hear you.
Well, great. It's good to have you here. How are you doing?
Well, other than the fact I got a terrible cold coming up from Washington, D.C., I'm doing okay.
Well, did you Have you been shoveling snow?
A little bit. I don't know how much it snowed yesterday, but it'll be approximately 72 inches when we finally get done.
Well, we've got Libby Casey with us, and Libby and I were just thinking about the questions we wanted to ask you.
How come Libby's ganging up on me? Stood me up?
never ganging up.
Just like Joel used to.
Yeah.
So, Libby, maybe you'd like to phrase this question of bipartisanism, because in the past we have heard the congressman be able to work across party lines.
Well, that's right, and I know, Congressman, when you were the heads of committees, you often had to bring coalitions together. But I'm curious to hear what you think about Senator Bayh's retirement. One of the things he said he's really upset about is that there just isn't the camaraderie there used to be. And I'm wondering, since you've been in the House for such a long time, if you see it as really being a problem now, and what can be done to change it?
Well, it's going to be very difficult to change it to where it was when I first went to Congress. I believe in bipartisanship. I believe in legislating. I'm a legislator, and I'm still able to do that, Libby, because you see me back there, because my treatment of the minority when they were now the majority, but when they were in a minority, and working out solutions to problems. It's very difficult now with all the talking heads and with instant replay of a debate on the floor of the House. There's no real debate anymore. It's playing to the cameras, trying to strike, make points. And this was on both sides of the aisle. There is a center core there that's really seeking to do this. And I'm not sure it's going to be accomplished because everybody talks about it and then they turn around and they get weak-kneed because in the majority side, they say, well, we'll take your chairmanship away from you if you don't vote with us. And I've seen that time and again. And that's not good for the country. Now, solutions, I don't think it can be solved until things I would do would be differently. One is, right up front, I'd stop those one-minute speeches in the morning where they throw bombs at one another. I mean, how can you work with somebody after you've been called a jerk? And they do that. I would do that. I would. They could do it after the session's over, but not early in the morning. I would stop the TV. I know you don't like me to say that, but the TV has killed us. There's no real serious debate anymore. And I would close the conferences. That ought to get somebody's attention because what happens now, everything's public. And so interest groups, all different interest groups see that, well, this guy's weakening a little bit. We got to shore him up. And yet he's trying to solve a problem by conceding a small amount of the package so he can gain a larger amount on the other side. But I say this is going to be very difficult to do. And what hurts me the most is people don't realize as we do this, we transfer more power to the executive branch. And that's the problem with this country. Now, the unrest of this country isn't just with Congress. It's with the bureaucracy, the regulatory form of government we have today, and people feel as they don't have anything to say. You can elect whoever you want to elect. And yet the bureaucracy within the establishment now, they're the one that set policy. And that's why they get very upset when we try to direct them on what to do. They get very upset because they want to do it, but they're not running for office. You can't fire them. And so it's a real difficult challenge. It will hurt democracy in the long run, and I'm sorry to report that, but reality is going to be very difficult to take and correct it.
Libby Casey, thanks for being with us on the program. If you'd like to hang a little bit, it'd be good, but I do want to start bringing in the callers here.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Steve. Congressman, have a safe trip.
Thank you, Libby.
Yeah, you... By the way, you're sounding a very good voice for a man with a cold. Mm. Hats off to you. I don't know how you do it. It never works for me.
It's very difficult.
Let's go ahead and move in on Charles, who joins the program from Wasilla. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Congressman Young, Charles.
Thanks, Congressman Young. This is an easy one. I came to Alaska because of Jack London, and one time I heard you say the same thing. And I wanted to know if you think it's a bit ironic or maybe a question of fate or what that you wound up in Alaska on account of a socialist.
Well, you know, that's a strange. My father knew Jack London, and actually I have an autographed copy of Jack, the Call of the Wild from Jack London, and that's one reason I came to the state because I wanted to. I was a pretty successful coach in California, and I wanted to go to Alaska and drive dogs and mangle and catch fur, and I did all three of those things and was quite successful in them. And it is a sense of freedom. You know, I have to say that he may have been a socialist, but that was during the period of time there was a lot of socialists around because we're going through the Deep Depression. And actually, before the Depression, he wrote those books, but he led that battle of, and as the time went by. And I don't really read his book as a socialist book. I read it as, very frankly, as a great piece of art that I still think every Alaskan should read. It really wasn't in Alaska. It was in Yukon Territory. But yeah, it's the same principle, same concept.
Charles?
Okay. That's good. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, that was an interesting first question. Let's go to Rhonda joins the program from Kodiak, and we'll get back to good old-fashioned fisheries here. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Don Young, Rhonda.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Congressman Young. I really so appreciate your show, Steve. It's very interesting that to hear you talk about the fact that you came to Alaska because of the opportunity that you were looking for, you know, a place where you can succeed because you work hard. Unfortunately, in our fishery system...
Rhonda?
I'm sorry. I heard somebody else on the phone.
Okay.
Our federal government, through Jane
Getting lost here?
I'm listening to somebody else on the line here.
Well, don't listen to them. You just listen and talk. You just talk. You don't listen.
Okay, sorry. Okay. Through our federal government, with Ben Lubchenco at the head, NOAA is pushing a system called cat shares down our nation's throats. It privatizes the fish in our ocean for no good reason. It doesn't do anything for the ecology, nothing for the fishermen except to put them out of work. It funnels the money into very few hands. The example is obvious in Alaska and in Kodiak. I see our town just dwindle away. I've been here since 1981. And through IFQs for halibut and pollock and crab, it's devastated our fishing fleet. And few people are very rich and sit back and collect up to 80% for not doing anything but lease out their privately owned shares. I'd like to know what you are going to do about it. I have talked to you about this before. You haven't really given me anything positive about fighting it. So there's a rally in D.C. on February 24th. Our nation's going to have a huge showing there. Expect to have 2,000 to 5,000 fishermen and related business people. Recreational fishermen are getting on board here because they see this whole catch the thing coming down their pike, and they've been cut out of fisheries already around the country. So I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about it, please.
Well, you know, truthfully, the matter we have here is a matter of population pressure and the supply of fish. You know, I'm right up front with you on this. The chances of changing this are not very good, and I've said this all along. There are reasons for that. One of the reasons, there are other enemies out there than those that are fishing and those that aren't fishing. You have a large segment of our society that's urban-oriented that doesn't believe you should be catching any fish. We should be there, leave them for the stellar sea lions. They should leave them for, you know, the orchid whales, the beluga whales, and on down the line. And we are no longer in the arena of catching wild fish. We should, in fact, be farming fish. This is one of the big issues that NOAA is pushing right now. And if you think you've got a problem now trying to catch fish, wait till they try farming them off the coast of Alaska. Now, I've stopped that so far.
Now,
let me finish. See, like, I know exactly what you're saying. Half of Kodiak agrees with you, half of Kodiak doesn't agree with you. And I understand that.
Incorrect.
But my point
exactly
is, you have a bigger enemy than those within Kodiak. You have a bigger enemy than those that want to stop fishing, period. And if the fishermen don't recognize this, they're being very misled. Because there are those within this nation today that want to stop fishing as they stop our timber industry. They try to stop the mining industry, and they're going to continue to do that. And, you know, I understand your frustration, but the reality is it hasn't got a chance to snowball in Washington, D.C. of becoming a reality.
So the quota share, Congressman, just to try and there is a potential, isn't there, that, I mean, one reason the conservation community has signed on the quota shares is because that way they can ratchet down the total catch without...
Supposedly not without scientific information. That's
right.
The question.
Yeah.
Excuse me. If I might say, quota shares have absolutely nothing to do with how many fish are caught. The fish that are caught are mandated by the people in charge, of
yeah.
setting a tax.
Yeah, okay, Rhonda. Yeah, I understand.
But somebody privately owns those fish makes no difference compared to whether they're available on the open market through a permit system. The same number of fish are being caught. Just a few people are being rich. Everybody else is being put out
right.
of work. And you cannot say by any stretch of your imagination that half and half of people are for it or against it. It's absolutely incorrect. As soon as people figure out that those fish are going to be privately held, they go, what the hell? Why would they do that? That's against the law. You can't
right.
just give away the fish.
Okay, we have your point. We have your point, Rhonda. Rhonda, we have your point. Thank you very much. Congressman Don Young is our guest on Talk of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255. I gathered your answer was you can't really stop quota shares.
The lady's frustrated. I understand, she probably has some shares. I understand that. But I am suggesting respectfully that the enemy out there is not the who has and who hasn't, is those that want to stop fishing. We saw it with the Stellar Sea Lions.
Right.
And if you run it down, run the species down, which couldn't be done, you say that science can't prove one way or the other, they're going to stop fishing, period. And if that's what people want, and our greatest asset we have in Alaska is our wild-caught fish.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest asset. Otherwise, they want us to raise the fish. That's why NOAA is pushing very hard, NIMS and NOAA pushing very hard to put offshore fish hatcheries off our shores. Not within our fjords, off our shores.
We'll go now to Elizabeth, joins the program from Sitka. Elizabeth, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Don Young.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Mrs. Teal, and I'm calling you because my oldest daughter, Rosebud Teal, was originally from Chalkeetsik and Fort Yukon, where she was born. Now, I know quite a number of people from Fort Yukon. In fact, Bertie Carroll calls me sometimes twice a week, and we visit back and forth. And I adopted Rosebud all those 36 years ago from Simon and Bella Francis. And Simon is now the traditional chief of Fort Yukon.
I know that, and I appreciate you know where Fort Yukon is. We have a lot of people in Alaska having the slightest idea where the Fort Congressman comes from.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place, my friend was telling me that she was sorry about the loss of your wife. And it's good to talk to you. And Bella's gone now, but Simon is still going strong, and he's, I believe, 86. And so that's the way that goes. Yeah. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And Bella and Simon are big friends of my wife's and my mother's. I mean, mother-in-law. Excuse me, I call her my mother. They were a very contributing factor to the city of Fort Yukon. And I, of course, I love my home, and my wife loved it. We always went back there in the summertime, and it's something that I cherish with all my heart, and that's probably where I'll end up if the good Lord has me. I mean, I hope to be cremated like my wife side by side, but we'll probably end up in Fort Yukon.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth, and thank you for your call from Sitka. Let's go to Scott, joins the program from Eagle River. Scott, you're on the air with Don Young.
Yes, thank you very much, Congressman. One of the programs that was in President Bush's first campaign was to catch up on the backlog of maintenance at all the national parks, and that got derailed by 9/11. Now they're looking for stimulus money to spend, and this would go to all the states, including Alaska. And I'm just wondering, why don't we propose that so that it gets support across the board, every state gets part of the stimulus pie, and the national parks get what they deserve?
Well, you bring up a good point, and I'm not going to dispute what you're saying. The program, we have a tremendous backlog of maintenance, and the problem we have, and if I can be very frank with you, is Alaska has more national parks than any other state in the Union and has some backlog that should be taken care of. But they're going to look at this as a pork barrel project, and the people in the lower 48 will be demanding most of the money. And Mike frankly will tell you that if we have a good set of parks up here, they should be maintained so they don't fall in a disarray had happened to be before. It's not a bad idea. It probably will be proposed. The chance of it becoming a reality. They're looking more now to spending money to create highways. And again, the same way goes, that money probably end up going someplace like New York or Texas or someplace else.
Well, thank you. You know, the first stimulus project that was built in Alaska was a cabin up on the Iditarod Trail.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Scott from Eagle River. Don Young is our guest, and Stephen is on the show from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Don Young, Stephen.
Yeah, thank you very much. Don, there's some things that have happened in your positioning there in Washington, D.C. I understand now that the Republican Party no longer allows you to serve as ranking member of any of the committees you serve on, and you have people with less seniority as ranking member than you. Is that true?
Well, the deal of what happened, I'm one of the few people that have been able to be chairman for two full committees, and I was ranking member for one committee after I was chairman for two committees. They passed a rule in 1994 that you could only serve 6 years as a chairman or ranking member in any one of the positions. And I know people say, well, you're just a freshman. That sounds like you've been talking to some of my opponents. But the reality is I'm better qualified to have more knowledge and context than anybody that starts out. I get my work done by the relationships we've done before. The ranking member, it doesn't mean a whole lot. The chairman means a lot. Don't kid yourself. But ranking member, you're sort of like a figurehead at the end of a scow. You really don't go very far. So I'm doing my job, and I've got assurance from this, because I do have 4 years left. I've had insurance from the minority leader that if when I'm reelected, I get in a leadership position. There are other positions back there that besides chairmanships of committee and besides ranking members. You know, I could go on to the intelligence committee. That's really oxymoron. I could go to commerce committee with the investment in the fisheries. There's a lot of different things I can do back there. I'm in this job to speak for the people. And the day I can't speak for the people, you guys won't elect me. It's that simple. This has never been about me. If I didn't think I could do a better job than anybody else in this business, I wouldn't be running. And if you think flying back and forth like I fly all the time and getting these colds is pleasant, you're crazy. So I'm going to continue to do what I have to do, and the decision we made in November.
The fact that your legal problems,
what legal problems?
You put on legal fees.
What legal problems?
Well, you've invested over $1 million in lawyers.
Yes.
Of your campaign.
And the governor invested $500,000.
Let me finish my question.
You ask the question. Don't be making statements.
Well, it's part of that. Does that have anything to do with the Republican Party's decisions not to have you as a ranking?
No, that's the rules. Goodbye.
Stephen, thank you very much for your call. This one comes from Mary by email. And she wants to know, Congressman Don Young, what is your reaction to the denial of the permit for building the bridges around Nuiqsut and NPRA for ConocoPhillips?
Well, again, I think that's very short-sighted. You know, we this issue of not being able to build a bridge, and I believe the reason it wasn't the permit wasn't issued, all other alternatives weren't examined. Do they want them to build a tunnel under the river? Do they want to have them go all the way up in the mountain range for a division of 50 miles and go across the head of the river? This is an example, of agencies and regulatory process denying and trying to stop any development of fossil fuels in the state of Alaska. This is part of Nancy Pelosi's and Obama's program to have no more fossil fuels developed in the United States. It's that simple. And cahoots with the environmental community. This has nothing to do with the environment at all. This is about using a regulatory branch of the government to stop any type of advancement of any oil development.
So you don't see that much merit in the Corps' objections?
Absolutely none. You know, but again, they're following the piper. And who is piping us right over the edge of the cliff.
Let's go to Charlie, joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Don Young, Charlie.
Thank you, and welcome, and thank you, radio station. You have an excellent program on this one. Welcome home, Representative Young, and I want to thank you for the long-term public service that you've given to the people, and also the truly great things you've done as chairman of the Transportation Committee, and I hope you and your staff will do a good job of explaining to the people of Alaska that as a result of that law, the donor-donee issue on funding for transportation funding is going to hurt us right between the gut. But my question, sir, our senior senator has recently stated that she is willing to go with this health care on a piecemeal approach. My question, sir, is do you agree with her? And if so, should we start all on square one, including members of Congress and their families, and do the piecemeal approach to health care?
Well, you bring up a very good point. I don't want to speak for the senator, but I've said all along, I'm not saying no. We do have some problems. We could have addressed them. The first thing I would do is allow people to buy insurance from any type of insurance company across state lines. Second thing I would do is allow industries and allow organizations and associations to pool their insurance capability, get a better price on their insurance. Thirdly, I would require the insuring companies not to deny insurance because of a previous condition. That's the biggest bone of contention. I'm an example of this. I had open heart surgery 11 years ago. If I frankly wasn't a congressman, I couldn't get insurance. It's that simple. Because I am no longer what they call in the safe category. Now, I paid my premiums up until 11 years ago, and I'm still paying them, by the way. And I'm saying that's wrong. So they can do those three things. I believe I said three things. And I would have tort reform. Those are simple. Now, that's the beginning. And I think we ought to look at those very carefully. Lastly, I would suggest respectfully, there's an article in today's paper, which I don't really like, but it's an article in today's paper about encouraging more doctors. We have a tremendous shortage of doctors in this country. It's rare that you go into a hospital today and you will find many of the doctors are foreign trained. Because we don't have the doctors available here in the United States. And I would also change another thing, whether we can do it by law or not, but I think the AMA could. Is what reason is there for a doctor to have to go to eight schools after he graduate with his BA degree? 8 years of schooling. Let him go 4 years to become a general practitioner, filling that void of general practitioners. Then if he wishes to, go forth and become a specialist in an arena which he enjoys. But right now, they all become specialists because only they can pay off the debt that they incur. These things could be done. But I say we have to start over from scratch zero. Now, frankly, it's not going to happen. This was never about health. This is about control. And the Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer group, they want control of how Americans live. I've heard her say this, that they want a transformation of how America lived in the past.
The question, though, is in regards to the health care issue. Have you ever come across a statistical point that states how much would be saved by the health care system if they were able to nip in the bud people before everybody goes to the emergency room because they don't have insurance. And by the time they get there, they don't want to, bankrupt the family or their small family budget for food or what have you. And have you ever seen a statistic or is it possible to get one of how much savings could be had by that nipping in the bud early of health care?
All right, Charlie, I'll let the congressman think about that as we take a break. And thank you very much for your call from Kodiak. It's Talk of Alaska with Don Young as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the 2010 BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Nomination forms for teachers are available in local newspapers and at bpteachers.com. The Rasmussen Foundation announces a March 1st deadline to apply for individual artist awards, which provide funding directly to artists to support their creative work. Sign up to participate in one of our information sessions to be held the week of January 25th by calling 297-2827 or visit rasmussen.org for more information. This message is sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
It is Talk of Alaska. Congressman Don Young is our guest. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@aprn.org. Our last caller from Kodiak, Congressman Young, was raising the issue of people having to go to the emergency room, and does anybody really know how much that is costing? Because lots of times they don't really need anything but a really minor type of thing, and yet you're supporting this whole hospital infrastructure just for getting a couple stitches or something.
Well, again, I'm not going to regress or anything. I know the emergency room is being used overly. But again, if you follow what I said, there's no reason why most people couldn't have insurance if they wanted to have insurance, if they in fact change the system. Then that doesn't mean a government-run system. If you allow people to shop across state lines, get different insurance in different areas. If you allowed the pooling, as I mentioned before, it lowers the premiums. And again, the insurance companies have a responsibility, and they're going to get themselves whacked because they had a huge profit margin this time, during this period of time, and they haven't really stepped forward to say, listen, we got to address this ourselves because Congress will respond, and probably in a negative form. So I understand what the gentleman's saying, but not to do it with it. There's nothing in this health bill that lowers the cost of insurance. No, there's the cost of health. In fact, it increased the cost of health, and it doesn't improve the cost of health. I was flying in an airplane the other day next to a gentleman from Canada, and he found out what I was doing, and he says, whatever you do, don't pass that health bill. And I said, well, sir, why? You got good health care and stuff. He says, that's the biggest myth in the world. It's not good health care. He said he had a terrible pain in his left side of his head. He went to his hospital, and he said it'd be 8 months before they could take an MRI. 8 months. So he came to Detroit, had it done in 2 days, and found out he had a small brain tumor right above his ear. They were able to arrest it, and he is now well. He says, that's our system. Now, if America wants that system, have at it. I don't want that system.
Okay, let's go to Clay. Joins the program from Anchorage. Clay, you're on the air with Representative Don Young.
Thank you. Hello, Congressman.
Hi, Clay.
Welcome back for the interim here, whatever that is, I guess for the snowfall in D.C. But, Congressman, I'm working with about 30 villages up on the lower Yukon, Kuskokwim area, and a lot of the questions rough things are up there right now with the storms and the cost of fuel and some things we can't do much about, but one thing that seems that we could look at is the disappearing king salmon and maybe one other thing, but when you were talking earlier with the limited ability of Congress to exert any control over the fisheries, I don't know if you're aware of the large, you probably are, of the large bycatch of salmon that
occurred. You can bet he's aware of it, yes.
The return of salmon up to these communities is so bad, and I'm just wondering if there's any pressure that can be put on the Pacific Management Council to really do something heavy duty on controlling that bycatch more than they've done so far.
Well, one of the suggestions I had, and this is again up to the council. I will not tell the council what to do because that's the key to our council. We have been considered the best council-run fishery in America today compared to other councils. But I've suggested to them that they lower that cap, that quota of bycatch. It was too high. They lower it to a lower point, and then they award those that don't catch bycatch by able to catch more of the pollock quota. That would solve a problem, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. That sounds...
And so far, no one's bid on that. But I've even gone with the trawling fleet and said, you ought to consider this, because, again, it goes back to the lady from Kodiak. There is an effort out there to stop the whole trawling fleet. Now, I will say this. I'm not totally convinced that the bycatch is the only problem. And I'm going to stress this, because remember, until 1976, there was a huge foreign fleet off our shores trawling mile-long gill nets, everything else, catching everything that moved. That's where the 200-mile limit came from. We still had strong runs of fish in the Yukon River. There may be other things occurring, and I've tried to suggest two things. One is the state miscounted fish last year. You're aware of that.
Right.
The pilot station, whatever you call it, wherever that county station, that's an old deal, and I think the governor's put it in his budget to put a new county station in. I am suggesting to the native corporations, Doyon specifically, Chalista, the rest of them, to put their own county station in. And then I'm trying to get money to put a county station that's federally run because we have a treaty with Canada. And right. So we have a collective accounting of fish. And if there is a decrease of fish, then we have to back up. But if there is a good run of fish, then we continue to fish. That would solve some of it. And lastly, there's only one fish hatchery. And I know some people don't like me to say hatchery. But there's only one fish hatchery on the Yukon River, and that's at Whitehorse. And that's ridiculous, if you think about this a moment. Well, I'd like to see the state put a fish hatchery on the Porcupine River. They do have a small run now. It goes up to Old Crow. There's no pressure on that run. And we could generate a tremendous amount of new fish and quit arguing over the fish we have. Let's produce more fish. When I watch this happen over and over, we argue about what's there instead of trying to improve the amount and the quality. And so that's what I would do if I'm working on the counter, and if I get the state to get involved and put a hatchery up on the Porcupine River, we'll have a lot of king salmon.
Well, thank you, Congressman. There's one other point I wanted to raise about the subsistence thing, and this goes with the whole rewrite of subsistence, and you know there's been a tremendous amount of difference between the state perspective on subsistence and the federal perspective. But one of the things as I've been working with these fellows up there, and we find out, as you're talking about, you know, the fish counting being so inaccurate, and a lot of the people that are in charge of dealing with subsistence and commercial fisheries issues from the government level are people located in Juneau and federal employees who fly in. And where do they get their information? They go to the people in the community, ask them what's going on, and then they fly back and tell people what's going on. And I'm just wondering if there's some way we couldn't change, since they're doing a subsistence rewrite, if we couldn't change some of the hiring rules so that local expertise, local recognized subsistence expert in villages, that their time in subsistence work could count as years of education or something, so we could get local hire on a lot of these issues. I mean, we're always looking for sustainable jobs out there as well as sustainable fish. And I'm just wondering if you might be able to get some input on recognizing local subsistence experts as worthy of federal employment, at least on a seasonal basis.
Now, keep in mind, you're absolutely right. I've been trying to do this in our parks for years, and they always say, well, they don't meet the personnel requirement. And I've made some inroads. I've done in Kotzebue, and I've got some Aktuvik Pass people working now, and I made some inroads. And it's a long process because there's automatically a rejection by the agencies that have their employees that live in the urban areas that go out and do this so-called studying. It takes a lot of effort, and I'm continuing to work on it, and I don't disagree with you because they probably have a little more knowledge of it. Now, having said that, I have to remind people the responsibility lies then on the users of, and if they destroy the fish, they're the ones that hurt the most.
Clay, I want to thank you very much for those questions. That was a very, very interesting discussion. It's Talk of Alaska. Our guest is Representative Don Young. He's live here in the studio and dealing with a cold, and we're all doing the best we can here. Let's go to Dan, joins the program from Chattanooga. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Dan.
Thanks. I appreciate being with you guys this morning, and I'd like to say, I'd like to congratulate Josh Kadzow, a young man from your Fort Yukon, who is on his final legs of the Yukon quest right now.
Yeah.
I just wish Josh could win that race sometimes. You know, it's a tremendous competitive race, you know, with the guys that run into it. This is about his fourth time running.
Those Fort Yukon mushers know what they're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my question, I think, is a little bit more important than almost anyone I've heard so far this morning. I'm going to be a rookie in the Iditarod this year, and I'm looking for some selections for my iPod. I'm sure that Mr. Young has some must-haves and I'm wondering what they might be.
Well, we heard about his opinion of Jack London. This should be pretty interesting.
You want to listen to music?
Off air, guys. Thanks a lot.
Right, you want to listen to music or you want to watch pictures? I can tell you that right now. Music, anything Western.
There it is. That's very simple. I think rock and roll is what's preferred. Yeah. They say it makes the dogs move faster.
Aye.
Let's go to Andy, joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Andy.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Congressman, I also send my condolences with the loss of your wife. I know that's a really difficult thing to face. My question addresses, I just read the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a comprehensive report for 2007, and it issues some pretty drastic conclusions that the carbon dioxide levels are the highest they've been in 800,000 years, sea ice, third lowest recorded level. We may have no summer sea ice within a couple of years, and so on. And the consequences to Alaska are tremendous. Well-publicized Kivalina and Shishmaref washing into the sea, maybe less publicized EPA's studies showing health effects on Alaska, the cracking of the infrastructure, and so on. So, you know, you haven't really addressed climate, as I understood your position, and sort of denied the human element in it. So, Congressman, why is that, and what would you, you know, what is your solution to this problem that we have with climate change?
Well, you hit a nerve, because I have addressed it, but I just don't agree with you and the study which you report, and a lot of people don't agree with that, or just not naysayers. There, you have this University of Alaska doesn't agree with it. They, in fact, have reports that we're getting 1 degree colder, not warmer. I hear all these scare tactics, and the ironic part about it, in 1973, there's a front page, the cover on the Time magazine. It says, "Beware the new coming of Ice Age." Shows a man shivering around a stove and how we were going to starve by the millions because the ice was going to envelop all those areas that can take and grow food. And it said in that article that, by the way, there is a solution to that problem. We will take, and the politicians don't have the courage to do it, but we will spray coal dust on the Arctic cap and melt the ice. And that was in 1973. You go back to 2007, and here's the same magazine. It says, oh, my God, the world's falling in the water, and everything's going to happen. Okay, let's just put our differences apart and say it's like permafrost. What is permafrost? Anybody know what permafrost is? It's frozen dirt. If you don't believe me, here in Fairbanks, go out and look at that tunnel that they've dug underneath, and they find fossils, they find all kinds of different things. It was dirt, and it was created when it was a very warm period of time. And I do believe if there is a change, it is going to occur. But this constant hammering of the drums without really factual knowledge, if you go back to what was reported out of the UN study group, most of this was stacked. It was actually fictitious, but it was the right thing to do for the scientists involved at that time. And so, you know, I've addressed this. I don't agree with those that think this happened. By the way, you try living in Fort Yukon when it's 60 below zero, and you'd be asking for the climate change to happen. It's very hard to live in that type of climate, and it wouldn't be the first time. You know, underneath the valley of Fort Yukon, and how it got there, I don't know. There's about 250 feet of coal, 1,500 feet down. Everybody said, well, that was a long time ago. This is today, and it will probably change over a period of time. One thing constant about nature is constant change. We, as human beings, can't stop everything, and we're also not to blame for everything, good or bad.
Andy, you asked for it, and by golly, you got it, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist awards. Learn more at rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
It's Talk of Alaska, and Congressman Don Young is our guest. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. We're coming into the home stretch. Congressman and John and Juneau would like to know if you want to comment on the possibility of maybe the House passing a resolution asking for a change in the rules of the Senate because of the filibuster rule.
Never happened. two separate houses, and that's the way it was set up way back when, to protect the minority and not to be steamrolled. And that's the way that the program runs. And I try to stay out of the Senate's business as much as possible. I do work with my senators from the state of Alaska, but they have some strains going on over there.
After, what is it? 47?
No, you need it. They got 50. Now the score is Republicans have 50 votes, and they got 50 votes.
How many years have you got in since
37.
37 years.
Yeah, 37 years.
Perspective. You're not about to be telling the Senate what to do.
No. That's why I never ran for the Senate either. The House is much more effective.
Let's go to Richard. Joins the program from Nome. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Don Young, Richard.
Thank you, and thanks for the opportunity. Hello, Central Congressman Young. It's good to hear your voice, and I want to add my condolences on your loss. You know, my good Jewish friends back in New York would say this too will pass. The memories and the love exist forever, but the pain of separation passes, and I wish you well.
Thank you, Richard.
I wanted to go back, and you're more than welcome, and I want to go back to the climate change from the previous call from Fairbanks. You know, I sit here overlooking the Bering Sea now. We're 100 miles from the Bering Strait. My question to you, Senator, because this involves things like the possibility of bringing natural gas from the North Slope to Western Alaska, the concerns of energy costs, and you and I have talked about Pilgrim Hot Springs, and that seems to be going somewhere. But how do you look at the next 20 years? I just heard what you said about global climate change, and I don't know whether I agree or disagree with you, but the numbers are there, and I see change, and I see opportunity as well for the native people developing and managing the resources. But tell me what you see as far as transportation. What do you see in 20 years in this part of the world as we continue to look north?
Well, Richard, you bring up a very valid point. If it continues, the rate is supposedly going, 20 years from now, maybe even sooner, you're going to see a sea lane. It'd be icebreaker sea lane, which will be move products, like you mentioned, oil, gas, and minerals. You remember, most of the minerals left in the free world are above the Arctic Circle. They've been inaccessible because there was no way to remove them. So the economy is huge. And by the way, you bring up another point. We're the only species that I know of that God ever created that doesn't try to adapt. We try to stop. And I think that's just being short-sighted. All the other species will adapt. You remember 11,000 years ago, which is not a long period of time ago, there was no ice in the Arctic cap. It was all gone. The polar bears survived. There was no human beings around, of course, at that time. And so I don't know where everybody got the idea that cold is good. You can't grow food in cold climate. You can't move really well in cold climate. You remember, too, when I say 11,000 years ago, they had wineries in Scotland. You think Iceland at one time was a huge agricultural country. And I'm involved in transportation, so I introduced the Arctic Port Bill and to try to develop ports in Alaska. On the Arctic Slope and in that area, Teller would be one, hopefully Barrow, maybe even offshore, so we can take advantage of this changing climate, if it is occurring, and take advantage of just saying, oh, my Lord, the world's coming to an end. I just think that's the way to look at things.
Richard.
I appreciate your comment, and I just to that rookie that's coming up on the Iditarod, we're waiting for you, dude. Come on to Nome.
Right, thank you, Richard, calling from Nome. Let's go to Myron now, calls from Bethel. Myron, you're on the air with Congressman
Young. Is this Myron Nanning?
Yes, it is. Good morning, Congressman.
How are you, Myron?
I'm doing fine. I just want to make a comment. I was listening to your comments regarding the fishery issues and on the Yukon River since the late 80s, early 90s, there's been fishery disasters declared out here in Western Alaska, and on the Yukon there's been restrictions and windows that have been placed, and last year in 2008 and 2009 there are complete closures of salmon fishing for those on the river on the Yukon. And
well, Myron, can I ask you a question? The count was incorrect. Am I right?
Yes, the count was incorrect. Plus, at the same time, the bycatch in the high seas was higher than before.
Yeah, and that's why I say the cap that they put in was too high, and I said that, and I argue that we ought to reward those that don't participate in the bycatch by giving them a larger quota of the pollock, and I think that would straighten things out pretty quickly.
Yes, but the conservation limits have been placed on the Kuskokwim as well as the Yukon and other western Alaska rivers for at least 10 years, and we have not seen improvements that need to be seen like those before.
Well, the way to do it, too, and I hope you understand what I'm saying. We ought to take and increase the amount of fish we have on the Yukon River, and I believe we can do it. And we can take and lower that bycatch cap and reward those that don't catch fish. I think you'll see a solution to the problem.
Yes, and I think everybody needs to participate, including the Board of Fish from the state of Alaska, and there needs to be more of an effort by the trawl fleet to help with the conservation effort instead of continuously on the in-river users.
Right, you got it. Thank you, Myron.
Myron, okay. Thank you so much for your call from Bethel. I think we got time for another one here. Let's go to David, joins the program from Port Alexander. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Don Young, David.
Thank you. This has to do with the limited entry that was just regulated onto the charter industry for halibut. I am wondering, was there consideration given for what happened 40 years ago when the state put the limited entry onto the salmon industry, leaving the halibut industry to run free? I felt at the time that it added to the chaos and overcapitalization in the longline industry. Has this been considered for the current situation?
Well, again, I'm not passing the buck here, but the halibut is under the Halibut Commission, is under also the salmon under the state commission. The federal government has very little to do with that type of operation. And you know, I'm well aware of the problem. I've been talking to Captain Bob and all the charter fishing operators, trying to make sure that there's a way to have access to fish. And of course, the commercial fisheries, they claim that there's too many sport fisheries in the business and they're catching too many fish, constantly fighting about the who's got what and who owns what instead of trying to work out a solution to a problem. But that was passed. The limited entry was passed by the state. It's not a federal issue, and neither is the halibut, other than the Halibut Commission.
So this, ultimately, it has to do with allocation.
Yeah.
It looks like the charter fleet is going to deal with this by trading. But the question is, should their allocation over time rise?
Well, the species doesn't rise. And I'm one that believes that the both sides have a merit. You know, the commercial fish is very, very important, but the sport fishery is very, very important as far as dollars go. You've got a tremendous amount of sport fishermen that came into the state, don't reside in the state. I go down to the safari club and I see all these fish in Alaska, and not one of them lives in the state of Alaska, but they have this so-called charter operation. And I don't know the solution to that either, but it should be at least Alaskan citizens.
Well, thanks for being strong for us today, Congressman Young, prevailing over that cold. You did great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on the show.
All right. Don Young, our guest today on Talk of Alaska. Dave Waldron at the controls, BD Trantina and Pat Yak and Annie Fite assisting with the telephones. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ACS. With Android on ACS, an app is available to listen to NPR programming on your phone. Complete details at acsalaska.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.